You are listening to On Human Rights, where we bring you interviews from experts around the world on the latest and most interesting trends and information on human rights and international humanitarian law. My name is Maya Elving, and we are broadcasting from the Raoul Wallenberg Institute in Lund, Sweden. Today, we're speaking to Ehsan Khane, who is currently a research fellow with the RWI Afghanistan program. He has previously held positions as a researcher with the Afghanistan Independent Human Rights Commission, a visiting professional at the International Criminal Court, and country director for the Afghanistan Analyst Network. Today, he's mainly here to talk about his RWI research report titled A Victim-Centered Approach to Combating Impunity, an assessment of challenges and potential implications of the International Criminal Court's investigation in Afghanistan. Thank you for joining, and I hope you enjoyed this podcast. Today, we're talking to Ehsan Khane. You have been a research fellow with the RWI Afghanistan program this year. This interview will touch on your current research. However, I would like to start by asking you to tell us more about your interesting career background.
Thank you so much, Maya. So, it was 2006. I was just finishing my high school. I went to Kabul, which is the capital of Afghanistan. And there was my second cousin. He invited me to his house. When I went there, there was a group of 20, 25 people from different segments. And my father's uncle was also there. He was he's a religious scholar, and he knew that I was crazy reading books, and I had quite an open mind, religious open mind. I was not quite sure about the terms of what we are discussing today, but in my mind I was always questioning the inequality, injustice in the society. And my father's uncle gave me the floor and said, "Okay, son, I know you know also much about religion. Do you want to share your opinion about this topic?" Then I start talking. I think I was quite good in sharing my opinion. I was just 18, yeah. And it looks like I influenced at least a few of people who are in the party. One of them was the host. He was, after my discussion and at the end of the party, he came to me and said, "I really enjoyed your talking. There is a training on transitional justice and human rights. Do you want to join that?" Then I said, "What is transitional justice?" The term was quite new for me. Actually, it was quite new for most of the Afghans. It was 2006. And it was, the discussion was just there. Of course, the discussion has a longer history, but under this title, transitional justice, it was quite new. Then he said it's a group of, or a bunch of mechanisms dealing with war crimes. Then I said, "What is war crimes?" Yeah, I had this interesting question. And he said, "Okay, maybe the better way to answer your question is to attend the training." It was a 3 days training on transitional justice, kind of its first in Afghanistan. People came from different corner of the country with different backgrounds. Of course, some of them were against transitional justice and against human rights. And that was the interesting part of the discussion, the 3 days training I was there. After the training, I just called my father. I said, "Father, I want to stay in Kabul. I found my place." And I was 18, and my father, of course, insisted to not stay, joining him back. But I made my decision. I said, "No, I found what I was looking for." That was how I became introduced to transitional justice, war crimes, accountability for war crimes, human rights, violation of human rights. And I understood that those things I was thinking as a teenager was not only in my mind. It has been discussed a lot outside, in the real world, and there are a lot of platform and legal frameworks to describe these terms. And that training, actually, or that discussion with my relative was a door to open to take me into a room which I was imagining before, but I didn't know that such a room exists. And that is how I started to become to be interested in transitional justice and human rights. And that relative was actually was quite supportive as well. He had an NGO mainly focusing on human rights and transitional justice. After the training, he asked me, what is your plan? I said, I'm staying here. I don't like the training. I'm saying this because most of the people I'm talking to them, when we are talking about that, such a training changed the whole of my life. They are saying, haha, it's the first time we are hearing that a training influence a person. Usually, when I'm talking with the other human rights practitioner or scholars, they're saying, no, it was, for example, I was in a conference, I was working with, I just coincidentally started working in that field. And it is rarely happening that people said, okay, I attended training and the training changed my life. And on behalf of the organization, I was working as a volunteer. I joined some initiative, human rights initiative, including writing a handbook on transitional justice. That was the first kind of handbook in local languages. It was developed by the Civil Society and Human Rights Network, which was an umbrella organization. And Irtibat, which I was working as a volunteer with that, was a member of that umbrella organization. Then together with a group of people, we developed the manual on transitional justice, then another manual on human rights. And I understand in the countries like Afghanistan, when we are doing promotion of human rights, it's always good and it's necessary and significant to have a manual and handbook first before going to training, because trainers based on that and then they train the others based on the handbook is quite important. And also part of my work with a volunteer job, I was also traveling, collecting data from provinces, districts, and send it back to the office. And there were researchers, they were doing the research. And this was the time I also learned that human rights advocacy should be based on research. This actually shaped the whole of my career. And that was how I went to an Afghanistan Independent Human Rights Commission, which was Afghanistan National Human Rights Institution, and was supported by the Afghanistan 2004 Constitution. But unfortunately, Taliban, when they came to power, they vanished the commission. So after Human Rights Commission, ICTJ, International Center for Transitional Justice, offered me a job. ICTJ was supporting Human Rights Commission with this documentation as a consultant, providing expertise how to do that. And that was how they know me, that I'm good in this work. And then they offered me the job to work with that. I was the only person on the country with two supportive staff, and we had a few people who work part-time in supporting the Afghanistan program from different countries. So I became the national coordinator, and my job was working with Afghan civil society and human rights groups, and also to work closely with the victims network and groups to make sure that the support they need, support ICTJ can give, would be provided to them. So part of that, we were working with victims mobilization, supporting programs of collecting the first inviting, mapping survivors and victims families, inviting them in trainings in different part of the countries. Then during the trainings, they were sharing their stories. And
I was just wondering if you could tell us more about.
And then they were bringing, they were asked if they have the consent, they can bring the remaining items of their lost beloved member. And they were bringing that. And Shane goes, this is the glass of, for example, my father. This was the pen of my brother. This was the notebook of my sister. That is the scarf of my mother who lost their life. And they were putting that in a box. The organization, Afghanistan Human Rights and Democracy Organization, which ICTJ was supporting that project, named that memory box. And that memory box belongs to that specific victims. After years working with hundreds of victims, when the organization collect these memory boxes, there were a lot of item into that, a lot of memories, a lot of feelings, a lot of pain, a lot of happiness into that. Then this memory box become a museum. They established the first NGO-based war museum in Afghanistan. It was active till the Taliban returns. And after that, I don't know what happened exactly to that, the items they collected, but I know they just opened their digital museum. They digitalized all the items and put it now on the website. It's accessible. However, due to some reasons, ICTJ closed down its office in Afghanistan. It was June 2012. When I was working with ICTJ, I really liked my job because I was providing support to human rights groups and civil society and victims. But the thing was that I was behind a desk. I preferred go to the field and try to be a researcher. And that is how I joined Afghanistan Analyst Network, which is a policy research organization established in 2009. So my job with the Afghanistan Analyst Network ended last year when I joined RWI as a fellow researcher. My topic was looking onto legal issues, political issues related, but all related to Afghanistan. And a part of that was accountability for mass violation of human rights and looking into the prospect of accountability, existing mechanism. To the laws, the platforms, the institution was which were building or creating in Afghanistan, or the political pressure was which were made to build these laws, policies, and institutions. But I also work with the ICC, International Criminal Court, the Office of the Prosecutor, as a visiting professional. And now, I am here with you, Maya, sitting here talking about my report, which is resulted from my fellowship with RWI. So, back to you.
I'm very, very happy to have you. We've heard you've had a lot of interesting positions. What parts you enjoyed and what you found more challenging?
Being a researcher is what I really like. And at the same time, I also was a trainer. I also like that, especially when I was traveling to the remote areas, organizing a short discussion about how, for example, journalists can report about human rights violation, or how human rights defenders can advocacy based on research. This is, of course, difficult to talk about that, but it was always good to go to schools, educational centers, to see how they are thinking, the new generation. These are things I cannot do at the moment, and I really am missing those part of my career.
Mm. Yeah, of course, of course. But right now you're writing a research report, which we very much look forward to reading. You're writing it supported by the RWI on the International Criminal Court and their investigation into human rights violations in Afghanistan. So I would ask you to expand a bit on your research topic.
Personally, it was important because I lost a few members of my family. Before 2006, before coming to this part, I lost an uncle. He was 17. I never saw him. Before I born, he was forcefully disappeared by the Afghan communist regime in 1979. But my father was always talking about him. And the trauma he experienced from losing a brother was transferred to me. And it shows exactly how a trauma can transfer from one generation to another generation. And so because of that interest and because of the profession I built during this year, because of the understanding of the need of the country and the victims, at the moment that ICC is investigating crimes, war crimes against humanity in Afghanistan. For the first time it's happening. It's a quite unique phenomenon for the country, for Afghanistan. And I know that a lot of people advocate for this moment for years. And it was not an easy position, an easy work for those people, to supporting a process be ended in this decision to investigate these crimes. So I thought, do the ICC know Afghanistan? Now they are doing investigation. Do the ICC know Afghanistan? How to do the investigation? Do the people in Afghanistan know ICC to communicate with them, especially the victims? Is the environment supporting an investigation at the moment? Okay, where we are, how we can navigate our way, and how the ICC can navigate its way to investigate the crimes, and how other people, other stakeholders can be involved in this process, because it's a huge process, and hopefully could bring some impacts, real impacts, including contributing to ending impunity and preventing atrocities and delivering justice for the survivors and victims. I put the title like a victim-centered approach combating impunity, an assessment of the challenges and implication of the ICC investigation of Afghanistan. So it is only focusing on the investigation of the ICC. Afghanistan has been in conflict in the last half century. The conflict started in 1978. There was a coup by Afghan communist political party, and they established the Afghan communist regime by support of that time the Soviet Union. It was exactly at the peak of the Cold War. So people from my generation and generation before me, of course, understand what is when we're talking about the Cold War. So after 9/11, if Bush administration that time decided that instead of military attack and taking revenge, they are working on an accountability mechanism, we would have a different Afghanistan today and possibly a different world today, because the war on terror shaped a different world. Accountability to fight terrorism could shape it in a different way. That was a juncture of time, very important milestone. And that mistake by Bush administration put us on a very different track. After defeating Taliban in October 2001 and establishing of a new administration for Afghanistan, that was a new administration, but the fight never ended. The fight went into another phase. And the fight between the Taliban on the other side and the Afghan Republic, which was established in Bund Conference and later received legitimation from different Loi Jirgas, Loi Jirga is the kind of council, assembly, national assemblies in Afghanistan. So the war continued till August 2021, for two decades, almost two decades. And Taliban won again. It was the Republic defeated, and it was the US, the NATO, the international troops, countries who had military presence in Afghanistan, they were defeated. During these wars, I can count it like five eras of conflict, many human rights violations, including war crimes, crimes against humanity, even genocide happened in Afghanistan. Unfortunately, Afghanistan is still in conflict. Though Taliban took power and the scale of violation have been increased, but the root of conflict is still there. And we can see every day the conflict is getting back. Some part of Afghanistan is in conflict. There are more than 15 terrorist groups, some of them receiving shelter from the Taliban. They are committing violence in Afghanistan and also in Afghanistan neighboring countries. The more dangerous one is ISK, Islamic State in Khorasan province, which is a branch of ISIL. So Afghanistan is still in the conflict. And these war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide, collectively called international crimes, they are happening there. And when it comes to the accountability, Afghanistan has never seen an accountability mechanism. There was a few attempts which were failed, like the conflict mapping report I talked about, that the Transitional Justice Action Plan. I talked before, and ICC now we are talking about ICC, is the first of its kind. So, investigation is investigation was authorized in October last year, and since then it is ongoing. There is not much public information about how they are doing, but according to the ICC establishment document, according to the Rome Institute system, and according to the larger concept of international criminal justice, ICC as an institution should prioritization and selection, because it cannot investigate all crimes happening in Afghanistan. There are limitations, and my research is looking into these limitations and these challenges. And my finding is that there are three types of challenges. One is legal challenges. In the legal challenges, there are at least three other type subtitle, I can say. There is jurisdictional and procedural limitation. For example, ICC cannot investigate all human rights violations. It can, its mandate is only international crimes, war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, and a crime of aggression. So large part of those violations which cannot fulfill the threshold of international crimes would not be investigated by the ICC. And it is called subject matter jurisdiction. And all international crimes cannot be investigated by ICC because there are other procedural thresholds for that. For example, the gravity threshold. ICC can investigate a few of these international crimes with the most grave gravity. When we're talking about gravity, it is not really clear what is that exactly in the ICC Rome Institute, but there it is the responsibility of the Office of the Prosecutor to examine and come with a decision based on a few grounds, like the scale of the crime, the number of the victims, the impact of the crime, and interest of victims is another threshold. ICC, when doing investigation, should make sure that it protect the victims' rights, well-beings, and dignity of the victims. So the question is, if there is they are doing an investigation would create harm to the victims of that cases, should ICC do the investigation? The answer is no. The third indicator is the complementarity jurisdiction that ICC has, which means that even ICC do investigation, come to this decision that specific cases and incidents is within the jurisdiction of the court and fulfill the threshold of gravity and interest of justice and interest of victims. There might be the question of admissibility under the principle of complementarity, which means ICC is the last resort, and the primary jurisdiction goes back to the state to investigate and prosecute the crimes, alleged crimes. If the state in question is unable or unwilling to prosecute those crimes, then the ICC would have the power to intervene. Before that, the ICC cannot do that. So that is the principle of complementarity. And the principle of complementarity could happen in any stage. For example, the Afghanistan Islamic Republic, the regime before the Taliban. And that was used under Article 18 of the Rome Statute. When the ICC prosecutor requested an authorization to commence an investigation into Afghanistan, and the authorization was given by the appeal chamber in 2020, the Afghan Republic said, okay, stop, come on. Or self-investigating and prosecuting the alleged crimes and incidents, you might look into that. And that discussion was in place between the court and the Republic for 1 year, when the Republic collapsed and the Taliban came into power. At the moment, when it comes to Afghanistan and principle of complementarity, using Article 18 is not a discussion. The political challenges around the ICC investigation of Afghanistan could categorize in three groups. One is the U.S. diplomacy, the Afghanistan diplomacy, and the ICC diplomacy. There are some allegations against the U.S. CIA and its personnel, U.S. personnel, military personnel, Evidence shows that they committed at least war crimes of torture and sexual harassment. According to the authorization granted to the OTP, that allegation should go under the mandate of the OTP investigation. Since then, U.S. threatened the court, has a very hostile position, put Fatou Bensouda and one of her colleagues in the sanction. Usually, sanction is for terrorist groups in the U.S. foreign policy, but they put this ICC. And the base of all this policy is called, there is a law in U.S., ASPA, American Service Member Protection Act, ASPA. Its provision, it could categorize in three. Now, everything is in three in my research. Okay, the first, U.S. should not cooperate with the ICC. The second is other state cooperating with U.S. can sanction them. The third one is if ICC detain a U.S. citizens, the U.S. president has all power to use all means to release the U.S. citizens from the ICC detention. So it is quite hostile against the U.S. With this law in U.S. and with the diplomacy towards the ICC, we can see that it is quite challenging to investigate allegation against U.S. And that is a part of the OTP investigation that was deprotized by that is deprotized by the prosecutor, but that is still as a part of the ICC investigation. And the third category of challenges, practical challenges. Let me just give you one example of that cooperation. ICC, as a court, does not have police. It does not have. It really relies on cooperation. It's a governmental cooperation, from doing evidence collecting, access to victims, protection of victims, from arresting and surrendering suspect. All of this rely on the government state cooperation. And the state cooperation related to ICC Afghanistan investigation is too low. A part of that is coming from the legal challenges, and another part is coming from the political challenges. A bigger part is coming from practical challenges itself. For example, ICC has a very limited resource in terms of including budgetary limitation and human rights resource. With a small budget, how you can really build the cooperation? It requires a lot of people, expertise, and resources to do that. So these challenges impact on foundational objective of the ICC in related to Afghanistan. My finding shows that, okay, what are those foundational objectives that is contributing to put impunity, contributing to prevent atrocities, and delivering justice? These are the three foundational objectives of the ICC as a whole. My finding shows that if ICC, with this capacity and this very challenging, multifaceted challenge, challenging environment, go to do investigation, and it would be left alone, this objective would not be reachable. Even this investigation could implicitly have a contrast impact, which means promoting impunity, the commission of atrocities, and victimization of it. My research does not suggest that we should not support ICC, but it suggests that this gap should be filled by other mechanisms. Those mechanisms could be like universal jurisdiction, could be national inquiries, what Australia and UK is doing. They are investigating the allegation against their own soldiers committed in Afghanistan. It could be UN mechanism, like a special rapporteur, what Richard Bennett is doing, or what UNAMA is doing. There is dozens of UN special procedures. So other mechanisms, these are just a few example of many, could support ICC to fulfill its foundational objective. At the same time, ICC should be directly supported by giving more budget to the ICC. Instead, should cooperate with the ICC. Those are the suggestions my paper is providing as recommendations. and as strategies to overcome the challenges and to mitigate the implications.
Nice. Thank you for that account. Yeah. Thank you, Aslan, for joining us today. We are very much looking forward to reading your report when it's published, which should be pretty soon, I think. And also looking forward to seeing what the future will bring. So thank you very much
Thank
for joining.
Thank you so much. Thank you, RWI.